You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, the Lake Wissota studio is relocated for the week, but nice to have you along. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 7:06 on this Tuesday morning, April the 8th. Nice to have you along. Coming up this hour, during President Trump's first term trade war, farmers in Wisconsin and nationwide got $23 billion in bailout payments. They would have rather had the $27 billion in export business that Trump blocked. Now, Trump is back in office, and there's discussion again about another multi-billion dollar price tag to keep farmers afloat during a second trade war. However, there's also a Congress that has for years now delayed approving a new farm bill and doling out, you know, other emergency assistance for farmers. So the question is, what's it going to be for Wisconsin farmers now? Is it going to be more stiff arms and delays from Congress, or is it going to be another huge, costly bailout? We're going to talk to Hans Breitenmoser later this hour, as well as guest Mike Strands from the National Farmers Union, who will be joining us. Reminder, if you can't stick around for that interview, or if you miss a show ever, head over to the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us, and you can find out more about the stations. You can find out more about the shows. You can get a little news as well. So again, that's just over at civicmedia.us. All right, let's talk to meteorologist Brittany Merlot now, and there's just no other way to put it as I'm looking at the temperatures back in Wisconsin, Brittany. I mean, yeah. Teens, still, April 8th. This is madness, I tell you. It's madness.
It sure is.
Dogs and cats living together.
Winter just keeps poking his finger in here like, hey, Wisconsin, I'm still here. Since flurries yesterday.
Not done yet.
For real. All right. Come on, old man Winter. Get out of here. We're done with you. It's too below right now.
I thought you loved the cold, Brittany.
I'm sorry. It's too below where? What?
In Kings, right by Eagle River, it's about 5 degrees in Eagle River, 2 below in Kings, actual temperature that is not their wind chill. So I just had to give a shout out to them as they're sitting below zero this morning.
Oh, my.
I know. And the rest of us, though, in the teens, I mean, we felt teens yesterday for wind chills. The good news is the clouds are gone, right? It's nice, clear, beautiful, sunny day today, and we will get decent. We're going to rise to those low to mid 40s throughout the afternoon. Now tonight, we'll get a little cloudy. We do have a wintry mix that wants to move in for tomorrow morning, bringing some light snow and light rain, mainly the wintry mix, probably in northern Wisconsin. But down in the south, you're looking at rain rolling in by the afternoon. We'll continue to see light drizzle tomorrow, and we could see it flip back to a little bit of a wintry mix with some snow by tomorrow night up north. Not looking at any accumulations, nothing massive. If you get some, it'll be by Lake Superior, probably an inch or so. But tomorrow's high temperatures are pretty nice, especially west. You're going to hit some upper 50s tomorrow and then upper 30s further east. And the warm-up trend just keeps going as we go into later in the week and into the weekend. Plenty of sunshine. And by Sunday, we will be into those mid to upper 60s. So spring is around the corner, but this is brutal right now.
I feel like we've heard this before, but yes, it could happen. Good morning from Tigerton, writes Rob. It is clear and 15 degrees. Despite being cold, the snow melted fast after getting, half an inch of snow, I believe. He said, I watched Florida beat Houston in a great game last night, 65-63 in the men's college basketball championship. Houston blew a 12-point lead early in the second half. The Florida Gators have won 3 national championships each in basketball and football. We talked about John Schneider being 65 today. He says, I watched the Dukes of Hazzard as a kid. It was the show on before Dallas on Friday nights in the early 70s and early 80s. He says, as a kid, I watched sports, game shows, and the weather, because if my dad was doing farm work, I had to know what the weather was doing about the forecast. And he finally says, the record low is 4 degrees from 2018. Remember, we survived April of 2018 with 3 feet of snow. Well, Alicia chimes in on YouTube to definitely whisper, because we don't want Wisconsin to realize that she hasn't given us an April blizzard, to which Shizu responds on YouTube. Alicia, shh.
Alicia's, stop trying to get the teacher to give us a quiz. God.
So definitely now folks are treading lightly, because yes, I do recall we've gotten snow, you know, like the first week of May. It can happen here. Sure. And if I talk about it, maybe it won't happen. Right.
Right. Yeah. Right? I agree.
Yeah. That could work. All right, Brittany. Ooh. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. In sports, the Milwaukee Brewers were off yesterday traveling to Colorado. They open up a three-game series against the Rockies before heading to Arizona later in the week. The series gets started this evening. Coverage starts at 7:05 on WRCE in Richland Center. Our stations in Oshkosh, Racine, Kenosha, WCQM Park Falls, and up in Hayward. Again, head to civicmedia.us to learn more about where you can catch the Milwaukee Brewers. And the Milwaukee Bucks are back in action tonight at home. They're playing the Minnesota Timberwolves, one of the final four games left in the regular season. As I was talking last hour about the rule of law and the stories in Wisconsin and elsewhere that demonstrate the way that we are in danger of normalizing things that should not be normalized. I came upon this audio from a couple of days back from former President Barack Obama. And I'm really hoping that, and I know we have, you know, listeners who consider themselves right of center, shall we say. And I just want you to listen to this carefully, because again, I can say all the time, what if Hillary had done this? You know, what if Biden had done this? What if Bill Clinton had done this? But you know, Barack Obama just tells it like it is in terms of just think about his presidency and what he could have done versus what he did do. Let's play that clip from the former president. It's just about 2 minutes long.
Imagine if I had done any of this. let me just, I just want to be clear about this. Imagine that. Imagine if I had pulled Fox News' credentials from the White House press corps. You're laughing, but no, this is what's happening. Imagine if I'd said to law firms that were representing parties that were upset with policies my administration had initiated, that you will not be allowed into government buildings. We will punish you economically for dissenting from the Affordable Care Act or the Iran deal. We will ferret out students who protest against my policies. It's unimaginable that the same parties that are silent now would have tolerated behavior like that for me or a whole bunch of my predecessors. So, and I say this not on a partisan basis. This has to do with something more precious, which is, who are we as a country and what values do we stand for?
There it is. I mean, the values, and that value should include the rule of law. And yet, when I think of all these things
that... hammered, okay? There's no way...
Sorry about that. There we go. Autoplay on YouTube.
Were we kidding? Thought we were getting live reaction to the former president's remarks over there. But Greg, you have a great way of summing up, you know, any one of these things would have been a mega crisis during the Obama administration. Instead, there was only one crisis during the Obama administration that I really recall anymore. And what was it again?
Three words. Tan effing suit. They lost suits. Their minds when he wore a tan suit.
Could so you not presidential.
Possibly. I mean, seriously, he is so correct. I cannot possibly imagine a scenario where he did any one of those things, let alone all of them, a tenth to their degree of what Donald Trump is doing right now. And the sheer amount of acceptance and bootlicking and hypocritical acceptance of these actions are shameful. And listening to that, I'll tell the people right now, you said to me in the chat, you said I should have edited out the pauses. I think the pauses were perfect because it gave you a chance. He's in a room with thousands of people and it is dead silent in there. They are taking in the information and realizing that, yeah, it's just not the same. There's always a double standard. There always will be. And what Obama did, anything he did, he has ice cream with whatever, and he is a communist. But Donald Trump doesn't go to a memorial service for fallen soldiers because he's golfing. It's fine.
It's fine. You know, no big deal. Tony notes properly on YouTube here. His own party would have turned on him.
Agreed.
Absolutely.
I mean, would have turned on him.
Yes. That's the point we keep trying to make all the time, is there should be a line out there for everybody, a line at which you go, no, this cannot stand. And it can't be something like referring to the Affordable Care Act as socialism or something, because now you're just being silly. Yeah. We're talking about things in the real world, like kidnapping people off the streets and sending them to a prison in El Salvador without even a whiff of a court hearing or representation. If that had happened during the Obama administration, the impeachment hearings would be scheduled before the sun went down that day.
Yeah,
that's all we're trying to say. And instead, what we've got are stories like what came out, started popping up from around the country last night, as it was clear on college campuses, the word was getting out that foreign students who, again, did everything right, filled out the paperwork, they're here on student visas, that the Trump administration had canceled their visas effective immediately. Immediately. They got to go home now. Mm-hmm. Whatever their financial situation, whatever their housing situation, that is not what they signed up for. And that is not what this country promised them. This country said, if you come here to get an education, that's great. Follow the rules. You can do that. Take your knowledge home, or maybe you'll stay here. And instead it's, well, you're not from here.
Yeah.
So we're kicking you out now because there's something less human about you. Again, that wouldn't have stood in any other administration, not just an Obama term, but any place else. There's something about this president getting away with treating people who are not Americans like garbage, whatever their worth or legal status. More after this. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
This is Brenda Russell, who turns 76 years old today. She had that as a hit. She's a Grammy winner for her music writing on the Broadway version of The Color Purple. She wrote hits for Patrice Rushen, Earth, Wind, and Fire. She wrote Get Here, made popular by Oleta Adams. And, of course, this hit, So Good, So Right. Again, Brenda Russell is 76 today. We do the rest of our history lesson weekday mornings at 6:50 here on Up North News Radio. And, Greg, at this VRBO where I'm staying, I wish we could figure out a way to hook up this turntable. There's a turntable back here.
Okay.
You know, and it's a newer one, you know, trying to take advantage of the whole vinyl craze and everything. But they left some good albums back here. That's the Eagles, Hotel California, over my shoulder there.
Cool.
There's Boston's self-titled debut. I'd bring them over later. I'm afraid I'd drop one or something. I haven't handled records for a while. It's been a while since I've been a disc jockey.
See, I could see you being a vinyl guy. I could see you have a little place in the house. Just, you know, nothing there, I love vinyl. I love it. But I am also an impatient person. So yes, getting up every 20 minutes to having flipped the record over or change the record is not, but
that's where I am. Yeah.
But when you get into that world of like, you're like, check out not just your vinyl collection is one thing. I'm fine with that. But it's when you want to show me your record player setup and you're like, this preamp is $5,000. I'm like, dude, that is,
yeah,
most of a car payment. Like that's half a car for some people. Like you should, I don't mind like getting to the rich quality of a vinyl, but like you shouldn't be spending like a private school education on the audio.
No. No. I mean, unless you're in the industry or yes, something, there's a point at which you enjoy, well, basically any hobby, any activity, mm-hmm, there has to be a dollar yeah, level at which you say, do I enjoy it that much?
Yeah. And, well, and, is this replacing something inside of me that I'm not dealing with?
Could be, but it was just nice to see the little throwback piece.
That's
of,
cool. I want. Oh yes, yeah, I love that album cover.
I know. So maybe I'll start showing off some of the other ones here. I want to take a moment just to pick on some folks who are still caterwauling after last week's election. And yeah, that's our word of the day. There was one on a particular conservative account that said this about Brad Schimmel. Brad Schimmel's 1 million votes that he got last week, that was higher than any Democratic vote in the history of Supreme Court races, and yet he lost by 10 points. Turnout ain't the issue, folks. Dems have mastered ballot harvesting over a lengthy voting period and can figure out with basic math where their opponent is likely to wind up in order to get over the top. This country can't survive mail-in voting. To which, if I may offer the very mature grown-up response, somebody call a whambulance, okay? Ballot harvesting. That's letting people vote, okay? I'm sorry that not every voter has a 9-to-5 job. Some folks are long-haul truckers. Some folks are in the military. Some work a double shift, or they're taking care of kids before their next double shift. But because you can't win a race on issues and ideas, you have to run negative ads, you have to run misinformation, and you have to constantly try to keep voters from voting. Could I offer up instead, get better at encouraging absentee ballots, get better at letting people know that there is a broad window where they can vote? Or maybe, hear me out here, fix your ideas and show that they give a damn about the concerns of real voters. Most voters actually aren't so fixated on holding back brown people looking for jobs. They want their own job to pay a decent wage. Most voters aren't obsessed with drag shows. They want to know why you're not more obsessed with kids getting shot in schools. Most voters want voting to be their right, not some kind of obstacle course where we're all happy to jump through as many hoops as you want to put in front of us. So stop whining or cheat more. It's your choice. And that's why I read the story about North Carolina and the cheating that's going on there, where, again, the Republican candidate there is following two rules of right-wing politics in the Trump era. Rule number one, if you don't like what the voters say, try to get some of the votes thrown out. Either get them kicked off of the registration rolls ahead of time or throw out their ballots by challenging them after you lose an election. Remember, Trump supporters tried both of those things in Wisconsin before and after the 2020 election. And then rule number two is run to the courts if you know the courts are controlled by politicians of your party who will likely side with the party over the rule of law, over the Constitution, over the election rules in your state or in your country. And it's why in North Carolina right now, there is this real concern that some 65,000 voters could have their votes thrown out. And it's, again, why we talk about this double standard in the media, because, again, if this were something that were happening left of center, threatening the legality of 65,000 voters who did nothing wrong, you'd have a lot of national media with their hair on fire. But I'm betting a lot of folks haven't even heard about this case in North Carolina yet, even though it's still going on. And so that's why today's theme has been about the rule of law and making sure that in elections, we set rules, we follow the rules, We agree to losses, and you live to fight another day. That's really what it is at this point. That's what a democracy, nobody likes to hear that democracy is based on losing elections, but it truly is. It's based on losing it and not trying to burn down the country as happened on January 6th when some Trump supporters were unhappy about the election results. Instead, over the weekend, you had millions upon millions of people gathering to make a statement. But at no point was anything torched. If anything, the closest thing that came to violence was when Trump supporters tried to disrupt some of the protests that were going on. There's nothing wrong with protests. There's nothing wrong with stating your case, and there's nothing wrong with trying to get your candidate elected. But when you're whining afterwards about absentee ballots and referring to it as ballot harvesting, and you're trying to change the rules and everything, it's just not a good look for you. Again, Brad Schimmel, just not the right candidate for the time. Other conservative candidates have won in the past. Republican candidates have won elections in Wisconsin over and over again. You lost this one. You have a chance next year to get Rebecca Bradley reelected or lose that seat. But don't do it by trying to restrict the rules that allow people to vote on Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. We don't want to be the next North Carolina. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk more about Trump's trade war, what it did the first time around, and what it could do to Wisconsin farmers again with Mike Strands from the National Farmers Union and our friend Hans Brighton Moser coming up next. You're up north. Just a reminder, you can sign up for our daily newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. Among the stories today, yesterday we mentioned it was National Beer Day, celebrating the end of Prohibition, but that's not for everybody. And in the newsletter today, Christina writes about some of the places you can go for some of the best non-alcoholic adult beverages. That and much more in our newsletter. Again, sign up over at our website. Our friend Mark Jacob, who you hear as part of our Week in Review panel on Friday mornings, he has the Stop the Presses newsletter, and the new edition of that has dropped, and it's titled 20 Rude Questions the Media Should Ask. It's a great article. So again, stopthepresses.news is where you find that, and of course, we will talk to Mark much more about that coming up on Friday. Last year, the United States exported $176 billion in products, according to Fortune magazine here. And nearly half of U.S. agricultural products went to just three countries, Mexico, Canada, and China, the ones being targeted most by President Trump. And so essentially when he's targeting them, he's targeting Wisconsin farmers. Now, the financial markets have calmed down a little bit after, you know, 2+ days of cratering, but there is by no means any assurance or confidence that Wisconsin farmers, manufacturers, or any consumers can have yet until we know where this is going in the long term. Add to it a Congress that hasn't passed a farm bill in years. It keeps kicking the can down the road. So what's the state of play in D.C. when it comes to farmers? Well, we've got Mike Strands joining us from the National Farmers Union. He's the vice president of advocacy there. And Hans Breitenmoser joins us as well, our friend, dairy farmer up in the Merrill area. Hans, you hearing us okay? How are you?
I got you. Good morning, everybody.
Hey, what's temperature up there, dare I ask?
It's about 15 degrees up here, but it's beautiful, sunny. It's not freezing rain, so we'll take it.
There you go. And Mike, good morning. You're out in D.C., I assume?
That's right. Good morning. And it's 36 degrees here, so chilly by mid-Atlantic standards.
I was going to say, spring is taking its own sweet time getting here, but we will get there. Mike, you're in D.C. You're at the center of the action right now. How do you best describe the current climate when it comes to tariffs and the way that they might impact America's farmers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the response in the agriculture community has been chilly to the tariff situation over the last week or so. You know, this is a very uncertain time. You've heard that uncertain time line so many occasions now, but right now when it comes to knowing that these tariffs are in place, that President Trump followed through on his promises to impose them. And now we're in a place where we're waiting to see how far this is going to go. It's a scary time.
One of the points or questions that comes up about them is this. Doing it on such a large scale with like practically every nation on Earth, including some islands that only have penguins on them, as opposed to negotiating, you know, individual deals along the way, maybe pick China or maybe pick Canada and Mexico. But when you go with this much, you can't possibly resolve them all at once. So is there any sense, where would the level of optimism be that this can all be resolved in a neat little package and there will be stability back in the markets, you know, in the near term, in the next 90 days or something like that? What's the confidence level that we could see that?
Well, we look at what happened last time. We've seen this movie before, sort of, in 2017, 2018, 2019, with the Trump administration's tariffs on China. That was more or less one country at a time, granted our biggest trading partner at one step at a time. And that was troubling because it was just the U.S. versus China, no assistance from our allies and friends around the world. This time around, it's really the U.S. against the whole world. And if this is a ploy to drive other countries to the bargaining table, that's a pretty tough situation, given that there's nobody for us to turn to, friends-wise, I guess, or very few, so it seems. So there's some challenges there. And how does this bring folks to the negotiating table remains to be seen.
Yeah, that lack of allies. I mean, look, if you're going to go into a war, including a trade war, it would be great if you could have some partners along with it. Hans, something related to you, and that would be just, again, the lack of certainty about all of this. We're hearing about it at a congressional level, at a national level, but at a local level, what does that uncertainty mean to folks like you?
Yeah, I dropped off the call there for a little bit, but yeah, it means a lot, right? Because these rural economies, they absolutely rely on things like the milk price, and the milk price is already volatile enough without having the leader of our country do things that are so erratic and so sort of bull in a china shop. So it has, it has an impact on the futures markets, which of course has an impact on everything. And the ability to make contracts with feed, for example, we get a lot of canola from Canada, and if we can't trust the contracts that we write on those, that makes everybody's life difficult. So it does have a huge impact on the local economies for sure.
Well, sure. And now we've talked about this in the past about the, bailouts or support checks, whatever you want to call them. And the interesting stat that I saw about this while getting ready for this segment is that the bailout payments from Trump's first term came to about $23 billion. But I'm sure farmers would have rather had the $27 billion in export business that was lost during Trump's first term. And yet, Hans, there's still that there's still a degree of thinking out there across rural America like, well, Donald Trump sent me these checks, and so he cares about me.
Well, yeah, and it is a bit misguided altogether. I mean, on the one hand, we pride ourselves on being, independent and capitalist and so forth and so on. But on the other hand, we support, public servants who do weird things that end up having to take taxpayer dollars to help bail us out. I mean, none of it makes any sense. We've talked about this several times in the past on how public policy can increase margins at the farm gate. But instead, we're doing just the opposite and doing it in a huge way. And it is very, very frustrating, because I think you're right, Pat. Most of us don't want taxpayer dollars. We just want markets that are stable and margins that are fat enough where we can make a decent living.
So, Mike, then to you, in terms of if this does not get resolved right away, and there's very little indication that it will, that loss of ag export markets is going to lead to talk about these kind of bailout / support payments. What is the chatter like in D.C.? Are preparations already being made for this? I mean, especially on the heels of Congress's track record passing a farm bill, where do you feel like all this is going, at least at this point in Congress?
Certainly with the expected losses that farmers are going to feel in the not very distant future on the markets for corn, soybeans, and other major exports, there's going to be that call for some sort of trade assistance. Market facilitation program back in 2018 and 2019, like you said, provided about $23 billion or so in assistance. The Commodity Credit Corporation, which is an arm of USDA, essentially, that is sort of the bank or credit card for how USDA is able to spend dollars on farm programs, marketing assistance, helping out when there's disasters. That was used in 2017 and 2018 for MFP. But that fund can get drawn down depending on how much expenditures there are, like for some of the disaster and economic assistance programs that were just set up in the last several months here, along with other farm programs. And if there's going to be some major losses here from trade policy changes, the demand is going to be high for those dollars. There's probably not enough left in the CCC at this point without congressional action to provide that. Pairing that with the farm bill needs, Farmers Union is focusing on pushing Congress to take action on a farm bill. There's a way to address a lot of these issues when it comes to competition and marketplace, in the marketplace for farmers, whether it's in trade and whether it's on responding to disasters and that sort of downturn. We can take care of all that at once with passing a farm bill, and Congress has the opportunity to do that here this year. So we're trying to drive home that message as best we can. Congress needs to stand up and pass a farm bill that addresses these concerns.
The problem has been, of course, that a farm bill has to be it has to be bipartisan. It's the only way a farm bill can pass, because there are urban programs in there as well as rural programs, and that bipartisanship is in short supply here. And it takes me to this question about the aid that has been approved in the past, and the USDA says they are expediting $10 billion in payments, you know, that are being made from the American Relief Act of 2025. Again, that was kind of a substitute for the farm bill. And yet we also see news stories like one in the state's newsroom that gives us the Wisconsin Examiner, a lot of concern that $10 billion is going to go more to large corporate farms rather than to individual farms. Do you share that concern about the aid that's already been approved and making sure that it gets to farm families in Wisconsin and elsewhere?
It was incredibly important to get that aid passed in late December of 2024, as, like you said, a substitute for the farm bill. It's a shame, though, that it wasn't part of a farm bill where we could have had more long-term planning and preparation for disasters or economic downturns as part of a farm bill. That's one of the things we need to have there. There were also some changes either to the economic assistance part of it, the $10 billion, or another $10 or $15 billion that's going out for disaster programs. It's very likely that those dollars will be allocated in a different way than we saw under the Biden administration, which made sure that small family farmers had the first opportunity to have their losses rectified. And that was a very equitable way of distributing funds. Secretary Rollins has already talked about that not being on the table this time around. So there's going to be some major changes compared to the Biden administration on how those dollars go out, and it could have a pretty significant impact.
And so we'll wrap things up, Hans, with something that you said very early on your first visit to this program, and it's a theme that is not told nearly enough, and that is the theme of competition, that farmers want competition. They don't want monopolies, that are lowering prices for farmers and raising prices for consumers, and that if we could just attack the monopoly / antitrust end of things, that'd be good for the rural economy and for the consumer as well. And I just feel like it's a bell we need to keep ringing.
Absolutely. I think that's a point that we just keep hammering home, and there's so much work to be done in that. But if we've got a Department of Justice that's more concerned about being, the administration's private law firm, and we've got congressmen who are, and then it's tough to get that done. But yeah, that's what we got to do to get at the root of the issue, is to increase those margins by increasing competition at that high level. Make sure there's more competition in the meatpacking industry and in the processing sector and in the retail sector. That's what we need to do to improve rural economies. Tariffs, not so much.
Yeah, there are plenty of, and again, we've said before, tariffs have their place, but on in this kind of a broad base, they can't be anything other than inducing chaos, and that's where we find ourselves at the moment here. So it's something that we have to continue to follow because it's such a big sector of our Wisconsin economy. So Mike Strands from the National Farmers Union, as always, we appreciate your updates on it. And for all you do as Vice President of Advocacy for the Farmers Union, thanks for the update today. Take care out there.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks, Hans. And
Hans, thank you so much. Have a great day out there as well. Stay warm. Enjoy the sun.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk to Chad Holmes about what's coming up on his program on 98.9 WXCO and wrap up our conversation here. Let me wrap up this segment here with a little bit of sports because the Milwaukee Brewers were off yesterday. They are back in action tonight. They are in Colorado for a new series there. Coverage will begin at 7:05 on several Civic Media radio stations in Hayward and Park Falls, Oshkosh, Richland Center, Racine, Kenosha. Head over to civicmedia.us to learn more about that. And the Milwaukee Bucks are back in action tonight. They are at home against the Minnesota Timberwolves, the first of four final games of the regular season before we get a start of the playoffs there. So that's a little bit of an update on sports for you. And again, Brittany Merlot's forecast tells us that maybe we're almost done with all of these teens and 20s for early in the mornings. Brittany joins us every morning just after the 7 o'clock news with more details on that. Chad Holmes is coming up next. This is Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Wrightlaw. Mickey D's drive through. Two muffins, one coffee, and a little bitty orange juice.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm.
Yeah, I know normally we play Chad Holmes' theme song, and bring Chad Holmes in, but today is John Schneider's birthday. Bo Duke is 65 years old today, and when you think of, you know, the good old boys of this show, I mean, it's Chad Holmes on Tuesday, it's Todd Alba on Wednesdays. They are basically our Bo and Luke Duke of Up North News Radio, and Chad joins us now. I don't know if you're Bo or Luke over there. Greg, I got a question. I didn't leave you out. You're our little daisy. You know that.
No. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with the Bo and Luke. Who is our Coy and Vance though?
No, that's
a deep cut for people who that's love bad television.
That's a deep cut indeed, and I did not appreciate it. Why did you remind me of them, Mr. Holmes? Thanks for allowing us to cast you. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Good talk. All right, folks.
What? You have no say in whether
I will not go into a five paragraph preamble. I'm going to let you guys ask.
All right. Well, then I'm just going to pick up where I left off. Chad, do you consider yourself more of a Bo or a Luke Duke?
Well, do you know John Schneider's politics?
We're not talking about John Schneider. We're talking about Bo or Luke Duke, two mad people.
I can't separate it. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like last night. I'm gonna jump right in. Okay. Florida won the national championship.
Yes.
Has there been any talk about, at the start of the year, the student newspaper had a story that the basketball coach was out there stalking women students?
Hi, Chad.
I was going to talk about winning my bracket challenge.
And I understand that people don't want to hear it, but it's like, you know, when I hear it, it's like, is there justice in this world?
No, of course there
guy,
isn't.
This guy was out there with his, I mean, this guy, the student newspaper had a big expose. They're investigating it. They've investigated all year. Do you think they're going to do anything to this guy after he won the national championship?
No.
Wow. I mean, and again, as somebody who tries to stay up on the headlines, this is news to me. And
nobody talked about it, I imagine. I didn't watch any of the game. It's like I can't. The Final Four had Bruce Pearl, who used to be at UWM but is a known cheater. You have the Florida guy. You have Kelvin Sampson, who was fired from Indiana for cheating. Yeah.
Oh, my.
Real great stuff.
So what you're saying is you're more of an Uncle Jesse guy or like a...
There you go.
We have found it. Chad is Uncle Jesse.
Penis is such a, a good heart. He would help the good old boys, even though he had the bad. You know, there. Give me a little Enos here this morning.
I was going to say Enos.
God.
I style myself more of a Roscoe P. Coltrane myself.
Roscoe is good.
Yeah, something like that. Okay, so college sports, we're kind of done with that. Not that I was going to explore it that deeply anyway, but again, it really takes the luster off winning my brackets through the Courier Newsroom thing. Which,
no,
again,
you were great. I mean,
I put no thought into it. I didn't. I just picked not totally at random, but you know, enough to know the SEC was a good conference this year.
Yeah.
I heard good things about Florida. Had I known what I know, what I know now, I might not have picked my brackets now, the same way.
No, I mean, obviously, you know, the timing was perfect for you. You know, it was actually, you know, it's you have no guilt over it because you didn't know.
My ignorance is bliss is what you're saying.
My okay, goodness.
That's exactly. I will definitely take that.
This officially took a hard turn.
By the way, next week, please don't ask me how I'm doing because it always leads me into tangents that make me look like the most ordinary old man in the world.
Hey, no. I'm just gonna give you a nice piece of advice here. Next week when you're on the show, Pat, you play you, I'll be Chad. Pat, you ask me how I'm doing.
No.
Yeah,
Chad, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing? See, it's that simple. It's that easy.
Well, I just...
I know. We like spicy Chad.
I know.
Like
I do love spicy much. Chad as well. And
no, it's like weird.
Yeah. It's a new level. Spicy befuddled Chad.
There you go.
What do we have on the spicy befuddled edition of today's program by chance?
Well, my heart explodes into love and caring because we have young people on the future of our country.
Good.
And there you go. We have some students who are performing at DC Everest this week in their musical performance of All Shook Up. So they bring back hope to me when they come into the studio. So I'm looking forward to that.
So this is your way of saying you basically answered the question of what has the mayor there done now? And on times when that's not what we're leading with, it means he hasn't done anything that causes further consternation.
I waved at the mayor last week.
Did you?
Did he wave back?
I went outside because
he waved back with all five fingers,
and he was standing across the street and he waved at me. And so apparently, he apparently hasn't been listening too much. No, the thing is, I know he's been listening. So
yes, I was going to say.
He's fine.
He just enjoys having to stir the pot here. So let's close.
Actually, they did have some update last week. It's continuing that the ethics committee thinks that there is enough there that they're going to continue. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I just wish they'd kind of get moving on it. And I mean, I haven't heard anything. I don't know if you've heard anything about what the DOJ is doing, because I know they had opened an investigation, and it feels pretty straightforward, but yet these kind of investigations seem to go a very long time. And I'm kind of miffed about that because, I mean, one way or the other, I think the information is there. And it just seems like when you have folks that are either politically powerful or economically powerful or have just, you know, some juice, it seems as though somebody that doesn't, they would have had a decision made by now.
If we've learned nothing in the age of Trump, it is that this phrase is quite literally true. Justice delayed is justice denied. Chad Holmes, he's next on 98.9 WXCO, and catch him on the Civic Media app as well. Uncle Jesse, thank you. Have a great day out there.
Have a wonderful day, gentlemen. I will do my best.
Greg Bach is back in 2 hours for Matinee on Air.
With you?
Oh, am I? Oh, okay. I better set an alarm. Okay. I will be there. I promise.
All right. Just
a little scared. We kid. Thank you for joining us for Up North News Radio for this Tuesday morning. Enjoy your day. We'll see you at 6 a.m. tomorrow. Up North.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.